It's Cofield and Company.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone?
Calm.
What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
Wait.
Everybody calm down! No!
Steve Cofield.
Boots with the fur.
Hey, man, you corny!
Adam Hill.
Oh, good for you!
Chrissy Paradis.
Any artist out there want to be an artist and want to stay a star, don't want to have to worry about the executive producer trying to be all in the video, all on the record, dancing, come to death row.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Okay, that's it. This right here is the get hit line. Cross it at your own risk.
All right, 5 o'clock hours here. Fired up. Good job on the phones, everybody. Good job on the phones. That's a big concern for people, you know, who wants to be violated, feel like you're violated, victimized, and then you can't do anything about it. But Justin answered the questions, how you can protect yourself if you didn't hear the conversation and you're like, what is he talking about? We'll post it after the show up at lvsportsnetwork.com. Big Five time. Frozen! Come on, Commodore 64. Come on!
Injury Lawyers presents
there it is.
The Big Five at Five. Number five.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We've got more fines going down in the NBA. Adam, what happened? Who did someone strike? What sort of violent action is bringing upon these NBA fines?
Well, last Friday, there was things got ugly between the Golden State Warriors and referee Merritt Kogut, who did not go well with that team. They were unhappy with him, and certainly after the game, we knew about that. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, both got fined pretty substantially. Curry, $25,000. Durant, $15,000 for critiquing Kogut after the game. But the biggest fine was to somebody that didn't critique Kogut after the game. The biggest fine went to Dr. Dre, Draymond Green, who was fined $35,000.
Wait, he didn't criticize the official, but still got fined.
He didn't. He did not talk. He did not speak. Say anything about him. He went on Twitter in the wee hours of the morning after the game, 1:06 a.m. and 1:07 a.m., and sent out two tweets. At 1:06, he tweeted out TD. 1 minute later.
What does that mean?
1 minute later, at 1:07, he tweeted out MK.
Wait, what were the officials' names?
The official's name was that they had a problem with was Merritt Kogut.
Okay, so MK could be the official. What's TD, another official?
Well, it's believed by the league that it's Tim Donaghy. So he's basically...
Okay, go ahead, explain.
What they're basically saying is that he tweeted out Tim Donaghy.
Yep.
And then 1 minute later tweeted out Merritt Kogut. All he did is tweet out TD, MK.
The clear message would be?
That he's basically fixing games against them.
That the official is fixing games.
Yes.
That's a really serious allegation, but he didn't say that.
No, he said TD, MK in
okay,
two separate
so
tweets.
Let's move on. Number four? There's nothing to see here. What's going on?
The league determined that was enough. $35,000
so,
fine.
So go ahead and explain what... If Dr. Dre, master of kinesiology... If the league is right, what's the term for what Draymond Green did?
Subtweeting.
Okay. What is a subtweet?
Subtweet is a tweet about somebody without mentioning them or either mentioning them directly or even at mentioning them, which is the more appropriate way to tweet about somebody. But it's basically sitting on a tweet that you're hoping that people read into and get.
Right.
But you're not going to mention the person directly, like... You know, you could tweet out, man, I work with some real jerks. And then people in your workplace are like, oh, what? Talking about me?
The NBA can't do this.
No.
You can't do it. But the concept of fining people for subtweeting is brilliant.
You would be broke. You'd me? Have no money.
Me?
Yes.
You I don't subtweet?
Yes, you do.
I've cut down on it a lot.
Yes, we've had some conversations, but you absolutely do it.
You taught me... that it is the coward's way out to subtweet, essentially.
I am the ultimate hypocrite because I do subtweet from time to time, but I am over the top calling people out for subtweeting.
Yes,
I did it the other day to a guy who was on satellite on the NBA channel, and he sends out some tweet that says, I'm watching someone right now talk about a comparison between Dwayne Wade and Jerry West. This is just absurd. Who? Come on, bro. Just name a name. And you know what's great? The responses to that, that is a subtweet, weren't. Because my question, I think I retweeted it. I'm like, who is it? The responses were, you're like 35. How are you even qualified to talk Jerry West?
Fair.
Because his comment was like, you have to know the history of the NBA. Dwayne Wade and Jerry West, that's an absurd comparison.
Yeah, do you know? It's the... So tweeting is fantastic. It's amazing. It's great in every way. I love it. I love the concept of it. I love watching people do it. I love calling out people for doing it, even if I do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. It's tremendous. But this is a really slippery slope. Like, as...
They can't do this.
As a blog pointed out, what if he's saying, hey, I think the star of the next season of True Detective is Michael Keaton. TDMK. You could mean that. I don't know what it means.
Damn, where's Justin? We want a lawsuit from Dr. Dre against the NBA.
You can't just throw those things out.
Claiming that, hey, I was talking True Detective. I love True Detective.
You can't just
prove me wrong.
You can't just fine people for sending out initials on Twitter. This is insane.
Number four.
You know, we just want people to be honest and tell stories. Don't be afraid of ripping someone. This is Dynamite. Do you know what is his name? Jake Owen, right? Owen, right? That's a country singer, Jake Owen.
Yes.
So he goes on some golf podcast, I guess. And, well, I know he went on there. And starts telling a story. Let's set up the story. And I want you to just think about the event he's at and react to this first.
I did give Phil Mickelson a lot of shit, though, at Jordan Spieth's wedding. Jordan got married in November, and Phil was there, and it was the day after he played Tiger. I had a few cocktails, and I saw him across the room, and I was like, I gotta go tell this guy what I think.
Okay, that scenario right there is dynamite. Because who doesn't want to walk up to Phil Mickelson and say something to him? So Jake Owen, sort of famous country singer, he must be famous. He's at, how about this wedding? Jordan Spieth's wedding?
It had to be a terrible event.
Oh, God. All these country club schmucks.
Ugh. And Mickelson. And, I mean, the worst of them. It'd be bad enough if just Mickelson was there. But who else? Like, now there's country stars there. It's got to be a... Just, I bet you Jay Cutler was there.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, dude is sauced. He's like, all right, Phil Mickelson's here. I got to say something to him.
So I walked over to him. I was like, hey, Phil, you owe me $29.99. I was like, for wasting 4 hours of my life with the shittiest golf I've ever seen. You guys hyped this whole thing up about this big match. You guys couldn't even make three birdies between the two of you.
Holy,
I'm like,
shit.
I want my $29.99 back and apologize to me for some shit golf.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Did he really do this? We'll find out. But he's telling a story after the pay-per-view showdown between Tiger and Phil. The next day, that weekend, he just walks across the room and he's like, you owe me $30. That golf sucked.
Did he get the cash?
Oh, he got it, and he got an earful.
And he pulls out a wad out of his thing, and he grabs $100 bill. He's like, yeah, I won 90,000 of these yesterday.
Oh my God.
He goes, take 100 and go
What?
Yeah. Right to my
this
face.
This can't be real.
I swear.
Oh!
I never thought I'd be saying this. Score one for Phil Mickelson.
No.
This is kind of cool.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is!
He backs up every D quality about
not
himself.
Not at all! He's like, oh, $30. Here's 100. I made 90,000 of these. Now go blank yourself. That's great!
Ridiculous.
And, but I also have no problem with the country singer going across and busting his chops.
Shouldn't he just have tweeted about it? PMAFSG.
See, but
go apologize for some blank golf.
You see what we're setting up here? I like not talking to people. I like a lack of human interaction, but this is what we miss, is potential face-to-face conflicts and humorous moments.
How
can you not be down with Phil?
It's such an obnoxious thing to do.
His moves shaking as he gets angry.
Yeah. Look how much money I made from that. But the whole point,
I don't believe this.
The whole point of his anger was, hey, you did make a lot of money for this, and it sucked. And you built everyone into... I know.
Watch it.
You built... Because Mickelson makes me that mad. I was about to curse. You built everyone into paying money for this awful event.
You hate Phil.
He's the worst. And now you tricked all these people, and then you were terrible. You didn't even try. It sucked. Like, I want my money back for it because you made a lot of money for nothing. He's like, yeah, I did. And take some of it here. Which, it's so
glorious, obnoxious. Glorious. I'm rich. Up yours. Don't be jealous.
Don't be hating.
Don't be hating.
Number three.
I also loved what happened yesterday in D.C. I like heat. Baseball needs heat. Otherwise, the sport is dead. Okay, it's going to be all people my age dying, and then the sport is done, and then I don't know where they're going to make their money from. International rights. Bryce Harper returning to D.C. was just a powder keg moment. It really was. You've got Philly fans filling up the right field bleachers. The rest of the crowd just wants a piece of Bryce Harper's hide. So in the end, Bryce got the ultimate revenge. He goes out, goes 3 for 5, hits a 458-yard bomb.
In the air to right center field. How about this for a homecoming? That is crushed into the second deck for Bryce Harper. And he gives those Phillies fans a chance to jump up and down one more time.
This ball is K-I-L-T, Kilt Thomas. My goodness. Hellickson tries to sneak this 89-mile-an-hour fastball by Bryce Harper. It ain't happening.
Did I mix golf and baseball? Did I say it was 458 yards?
Yeah.
Okay, 458 feet. 458 yards would have been unbelievable, but 458 feet. Now, it wasn't all Bryce's day, because early in the game, first at bat against Max Scherzer, it didn't go that well.
And Max with 85 on the off-speed strikes him out.
I'll tell you what, I've been waiting for that since Bryce Harper signed, and that lived up to the billing.
Boy, I would have loved to have gotten the Nats radio network, the second call, and its reaction on the home run, but how gutless is whoever runs the Nats website would not post the home run by Bryce. I had to get the Phillies call. I mean, our Vast Sound crew got the Phillies call. That was the Phillies radio network. That was awesome.
It was great.
Yesterday. And I'll give you the other reason it was awesome. One, Bryce Harper, it wasn't enough for him to hit the home run. He went like complete majorette. Do we know what that is? Is that the right term?
Majorette.
Baton.
Okay.
That bat flip spin.
It's great.
Holy crap.
It was perfect.
It was unreal.
Yeah. I mean, I think
it was
early.
Like 18 rotations. Woo!
It was pretty clear early in the game, and you heard the strikeout there. Like, Bryce was, he was going to hit either a 500-foot home run right, or strike out every time.
Yep.
Like, that was yesterday, that was all he was going to do. If there was a runner on third and one out.
Yep.
In like the ninth inning in a tie game, he's not going for a sack fly.
He's going Reggie down to a knee.
He is hitting a home run or he's striking out. That was his goal, and he finally got there. It was an incredible atmosphere for an April baseball game. It doesn't get much better than that.
Did you watch any of the highlights?
Oh yeah, highlights for sure.
Did you notice anything about the crowd?
That they left very early.
Okay.
I mean, they were gone.
Okay. So what's the deal?
Well, there's no more excitement. Bryce Harper's gone. No more excitement.
See, here's the funny thing. All these people in D.C. are like, he's not worth that much money. Is that right? Where were you?
Yeah.
The owners of the Nats. That's not, again, that's a very transient city. That's not a great baseball city.
No.
Like, how much money did they ultimately cost themselves by not spending the $30 million a year? You think they're going to lose $30 million in ticket revenue?
Probably. For sure, they're going to lose a lot. It's you let a guy go who, yeah, there's some negatives maybe, but he's a superstar player who brings attention and brings people to the ballpark, and that's what you need. And they lost it, and they let it go. And then you're looking at the bottom line and the dollars. Like, that's a lot of money to pay a guy. Yeah, he generates a lot of money. He does, and you can have your young stars, and I know they're very excited about some of the young talent they have there. But they're not Bryce Harper. They don't bring people. They don't make people come to the ballpark every night. He does.
Yeah, reported crowd to start 35,000. Let's see how attendance goes when they're around 500 the whole year. Not worth it. Just like in San Diego. Not worth it for Machado. Is that right? They had nearly 40,000 a game in the opening series.
Yeah. Yeah. There are certain guys that bring people out, and those are two of them.
Number three. Number two.
Yes. Yes. My God. What is Conor McGregor doing? And now Khabib is responding. These guys who started a Pier 6 brawl after their brawl here in town. Again, another incident involving Conor McGregor where the public is in danger. And now what did Conor light the fire with? But you are in trouble, bro! You're facing sexual assault charges. You were arrested in Miami in the last 2 weeks. Shut up! What do you say now?
Conor McGregor sent out a tweet. It was a wedding photo from Khabib Nurmagomedov's wedding where his wife's face is covered with a veil. And he said, "Your wife is a towel, mate." Obviously insulting both the wife and the religion, everything else about Nurmagomedov. It's not the first time he has taken shots.
Why did this brawl start the last time around? Some of the language got so xenophobic, right, before that fight between Khabib and Conor here in Vegas, that it was just waiting to explode after the fight. And one of the guys on the McGregor team, what's his name, Dylan Danis?
Yeah.
He's the leader of that with the offensive language. And we still haven't curbed this? This is why I've said this a million times. I understand we want to make money here. But now public safety is at risk when these guys fight. We even see other guys, right, not involved in this war with Colby Covington and Usman. I'm going to the Palms to have a buffet. I just want to have some lunch. And these guys are ready to throw punches in the freaking buffet line. It's become a public safety hazard. Can the UFC do something? Send some kind of message? Because then after Conor sends out this, then Khabib comes back and is like, rapist, 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 rapist. Like, all right, this is not going to stop. So what is Dana White going to do?
He issued a statement.
Okay, this better be... Come on, let's get something here. Let's get some strong action here and send a message.
I'm aware of the recent social media exchange between Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor. The ongoing situation has escalated to a level that is unacceptable. As such, we are taking the necessary steps to reach out to both athlete camps, and this situation is being addressed by all parties internally. Conor did delete the tweet.
Okay.
So that might have been one step.
It's too late.
But the issue is, you want to fix this, then don't respond to it and react to it. And I mean the fans. This happened in the last fight, and you could have ignored it and not watched the fight.
I know,
but it was the biggest fight of all time.
It's not on us. It's not on the consumer.
It's the biggest fight of all time.
It's not on the consumer.
Why I have a problem with the UFC stepping in and saying anything. Why would you?
Well, I have a problem with the commission licensing fights that potentially can spill into the crowd or at the press conference where you're having bottles of water thrown at you, where we've got full cans of energy drink thrown across the crowd. We've got, you know, in the past, other fighters are kicking each other off the stage.
That's what people want.
I don't want to get hurt at a fight. You're right. People viewing. I'm talking about the state of Nevada. Cut this out. I don't need the next day after a fight for two morons and their campers to be starting a brawl while I'm trying to get some beef stroganoff at freaking the Palms and some soup.
Do they have stroganoff?
I don't know. That's what I would get. It's a Sunday. Right. Was it Sunday or Monday? It might be brunch.
It was a Sunday.
I'll get some French toast, and I'll get some spare ribs.
They absolutely.
But now I got to worry about all that because these guys are ready to throw at my face in a line.
I would say the UFC is absolutely responsible for added security at the next fight. There's no question about that. That's on them.
Well, they're also responsible for from. I'll speak for the citizens of Nevada. At the end of the fight night, outside of hospital visits, by 2 a.m., get all of these morons out of this town. Get them on flights and send them somewhere else to terrorize people there. Separate them and get them out of here.
I don't think you take away people's rights.
You know what's funny? I've done this rant so many times, and everyone thinks it's make-believe. I'm giving you examples when it spilled into the public,
right,
and citizens, just your average Joe, is at risk. Something has to be done.
I think Conor McGregor's tweet was disgusting. I think there's no question about that. However, that's what people want. That's what they like. And to your point, yes, I absolutely think the UFC needs to be charged and billed for whatever extra security is needed. I don't care if it's the entire
police force that's there. You're missing
yes.
this one. I don't care. I know it's good for business to play to the lowest common denominator, to stand on the sidelines and not do a damn thing about racist and xenophobic speech is shameful. We're not going to get upset about this, right? Seriously, in the end, the promotion's not going to get upset about this. You got a call from Dana White one time because you wrote what word about Dana White?
A fighter called him a weirdo, and I used it in a quote.
And what happened when he called you?
He was not happy.
I mean, what else do we have to say? What else do we have to say?
He didn't like that.
So if it's him...
Well, in this case, he did say they're taking the steps to make sure it doesn't happen. I mean, he said the right things.
Okay.
So we'll see if they follow through
on it. What steps do we take after the Dolly's going through the bus? Yeah. What steps do we take after a fighter from the Diaz camp throws a bottle of water a foot from your head and almost hits you in the face? What steps? Where are the steps?
They were told not to do it again. It was said to be the most disgusting thing that's ever happened to UFC, but it didn't really matter. But again, it is the market dictating it on that level. I mean,
I get it.
That's what people want. So what motivation does the UFC have if they allowed it to get out of control? And I think most people would agree they allowed the speech to get out of control leading up to the first fight. There's no question. And the response from the fans was, this is what we want. So what is the motivation of the UFC to say, yeah, we don't want this. We want to impact our business by toning down the talk and the rhetoric and the nonsense. It gives you somebody to hate. Like, clearly you should probably hate Conor McGregor. He is a racist, xenophobic jerk at times. You should probably hate him. And so you probably shouldn't watch his fights. But as long as people do, it's going to keep happening.
Number one.
Big weekend coming up in Vegas. Saturday, UNLV football is back on the field. You get a look at some of the guys who sat out last year, some of the newcomers. Vegas Vic, right? You get to see the progress of all the holdovers. Who's going to step in at running back for Lexington Thomas? How does the new look defense? How's it coming along? We're actually going to broadcast live on Saturday from spring practice, 11:30 to 1:30, to get us amped up and prep us for what's going down on Saturday. Tony Sanchez will join us in less than five.
The Big 5 at 5 is brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. Call them today for a free consultation at 702-570-9000. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rodgers takes a knee. That's going to be it. There's 34 seconds to go, but nobody can stop the clock. And a jubilant bunch of Rebels are already on the field. And the Wolfpack coming in from the other sideline. There's still 24 seconds on the clock, but the celebration has begun. And guess what, folks? The Fremont Cannon is coming back to Las Vegas.
End of the football season for the Rebels. Boy, I almost slipped there. I'm so used to saying running Rebels lately. But football's back this weekend. You hear Russ Langer, Learfield, Rebels Radio Network on the call there, the big victory over the Wolfpack. So Tony Sanchez and company are back this Saturday. We'll have a live broadcast around the spring game starting at 11:30. 2 hours of football talk this Saturday, and the coach joins us. What's up, coach?
Hey, guys. How we doing?
We're good. We're good. All right. Tell people what you have in store for the spring game.
Well, you know, it's always a fun day. It looks like we're going to have some great weather out there. And they're going to have, you know, the barbecue rolling out there, face painting and all that fun stuff for the kids. There'll be music playing the whole time. And on the football end of it, we're going to get a couple processes in. Where, you know, we'll obviously get the warm-up done, and then we'll do some live goal line situation stuff. We'll do a couple live punts, some live PAT field goals. And then we'll do 2 25-minute halves of football. So everything will be live other than the quarterbacks. We're going to keep guys off the quarterbacks on Saturday and try to keep everybody healthy as we finish up. But it's been a good spring. We're excited to get out there in front of the fans.
Spring games have changed over the years. Not like in the past you were annihilating each other, but it was actually a game. Do you kind of dislike that you really can't crack the pads now in this era?
I believe TCU canceled their spring game. Yeah. I just heard that today, you know, because they've got a bunch of guys banged up. And I think you get so nervous about losing, you know, key guys to injuries. But, you know, at the end of the day, there is a time where you got to get after it. We had 3 days where we really got after it, you know, pretty hardcore in scrimmages. You'll see some of that on Saturday, but it'll be a little controlled too. Again, you know, you're going to play a lot more guys. I mean, Armani, you'll see him out there probably for a couple series. Same with Max. We want to see those young quarterbacks get going. You know, some of those old linemen that have played a bunch, they'll get a couple good series in and then get them out of there. And you know, some of the older defensive guys. So you're going to see all of our guys. I mean, you're going to see all 98 guys play a bunch.
How important is this time of year for the development of a football program?
It's huge. It really is. I mean, you know, in the best case scenario, you know, you obviously you're going to have that bowl season. And when you talk about bowl season, it's really those guys that aren't really playing in the game, just getting those extra practices in. Obviously, we didn't have that. So now you get into spring football, and all the young guys you have on your roster, all the guys that haven't been starters before that you're going to be counting on in a variety of different ways, you got to get them those real-time reps. Good thing for us is how many guys, high school kids, that were able to graduate early and come on in. It was a big, big number. So the majority of our guys are there. A handful of guys still to come in, but it's a big developmental time.
Why does that make a difference? Both the high school guys who came in, and there's two different kinds of JUCOs, the ones who are going to arrive late in the summer and the guys who are in early. Why does that make such a big difference?
Well, a couple things. Number one, just acclimating to the college atmosphere, getting that under your belt. And then another thing, too, is just learning the system. I mean, if you show up in August or even if you show up in June, we're very limited in what we can do with our guys. But you show up in August for camp and you haven't run a single rep in the program before, there's a lot of mistakes that are just inevitably going to be made, and you're going to learn from them and get better from them. Well, you're doing that 30 days from kickoff rather than 6 months from kickoff. So it's a big deal to have those young guys get in, get the reps. We have a bunch of time between the end of the spring and the summertime to rewatch that with our guys, to reteach it, so it won't be foreign when they show up in August.
You've been through this a couple times now. So in your experience the last few years, can you tell a lot about a player or even like a unit of your team right now, or is it just really about developing a lot and you don't really know much about the players until you see them in the fall?
No, you know a lot about them. The guys that have been around for a couple, 2-3 years, you know who they are. You know what motivates them. You know how they tick. You know how you need to coach them. You know the things they need to take care of off the field. You know their good habits or bad habits. I mean, whether it comes to eating or sleeping or just, you know, academics and all those things. So I think, the longer you're around them, the better you can handle and help them. And the more comfortable they become. So there are certain units. I mean, like you look at that old line unit. We have 10 guys with starts under their belt. Unfortunately, Justin Polu lost his grandmother, and Jaron Caldwell had a surgery the other day, and both those guys were out, and we didn't skip a beat. I mean, it just, in the past, that would have kind of been disruptive to practice. That wasn't disruptive at all. We have plenty of guys throwing in there. So there's certain units you really know that they're veteran, they're older, and you're going to really be able to lean on them.
Tony Sanchez, UNLV football coach, is here with Cofield and Company, broadcast this Saturday of the spring game starting at 11:30 right here on ESPN 1100 and 100.9. FM. With the holdovers, it's not like you're holding, 50 practices here. It's limited. With the holdovers, is this a good way to tell how much work the guys have been putting in on and off the field? You get enough of those indicators to sort of light a fire under the guys where you're like, hey, you didn't do what you're supposed to be doing the last couple of months.
Yeah, they've done such a good job in the strength and conditioning program with Coach Manuel. He's done a really, really good job with those guys. I mean, they came in and they were in pretty good shape. I mean, the only way to truly get in football shape is by playing it. But I tell you what, it only took a day or two for them to acclimate and hit the ground running. So that was really good to see. Really impressed with Sean, his staff, and what they're doing with the guys. And I tell you what, it's been our best offseason by far. You're really starting to see that leadership. Again, with so many guys returning to the roster, there's just so many guys that understand the processes, the way we act, the way we need to talk, the way we go about doing things. You're starting to see some real genuine leadership and understanding of just being a pro and doing it the right way, and it's been real reflective. And they all handled the offseason really well as far as, getting in that weight room, getting themselves ready.
You see enough out of newcomers where you can actually start making depth chart, the mental decisions, like, hey, this guy's come in, because you're rebuilding the back end of the defense and the defensive back positions. Do you see enough from the newcomers where you get a general idea? You're like, I think that person is going to be in the mix, or maybe even number one on the depth chart.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there are some freshmen that showed up, and they're more ready than we thought they'd be. They're more physical. They're picking it up faster. And so there's a couple of those guys. You're like, oh damn. I mean, that's a guy who might pencil in the two deep and definitely help on special teams. There's other guys who you're thinking probably a year away. You may need to redshirt them. And then there's some guys like you talked about, like they handled the offseason. They worked really hard. Are we going to see that mental development, and is it going to apply out on the football field? So there's some guys that, that were red shirts last year, guys that were, threes last year that had great off seasons. They've grown, have gotten bigger and stronger. They're more confident, and it's showing on the field. So, believe me, once a week we're sitting down having those depth chart conversations, okay. And we're talking personnel, and we have a good, pretty good barometer on it.
So let's go back to the freshmen. Do you want to pop some of the freshmen who have been a little more impressive, or is this bloated ego territory?
Say that again.
No, I say, do you want to mention some of the freshmen, or are you like, yeah, you know what, let's not give them a big ego by mentioning them?
Well, no, hopefully they're doing homework and not listening right now.
There you go.
But, but like, you get guys like Jacoby Windham out of John Arrott High School. My goodness, I mean, that guy is an athlete. I mean, he's physical, he's strong, he's got a mean streak to him, moves really well. He's a guy that could definitely help on special teams, so we got to ask ourselves, is he going to be able to play, you know, in the two deep at a linebacker spot? And eventually he's going to be a big-time player here. So we got to figure that out. But with that four-game rule, he'll definitely make an impact. Kyle Beaudry from Liberty High School, I mean, he's kicking. He's got all A's in all of his classes. He's picked up the defense just overnight. I mean, he's really nice. He's an old soul, man. He carries himself that way, works that hard. There's some physical things we got to get him used to playing faster, got to get him in really good shape, get him in that weight room and everything. But as far as a football player, man, he's just done a really, really good job. So excited about him. And then Courtney Reese, that little running back, really reminds us of Lexington. They're almost the exact same size. You know, he's a legit, you know, high 4.3 type guy, really good in space, really slight though, 170 pounds. So we're going to have to really, bulk him up a little bit, but he's a guy that can come out and make a difference too.
Obviously, when you're recruiting these guys, you like them, you like what they can do, and you want to bring them into your program. But how often do you recruit a guy, he comes in, and then you go to spring practice and you're like, wow, that guy is even better than I thought he could be?
It happens. You know what? And you're holding your breath because you're hoping so. Because, when you go out and you recruit guys, you do a good job of, measuring them, measuring their programs, measuring the families they come from. But, at the end of the day, until you get them, can they be coached hard? Do they love the game? Do they love the weight room? Are they going to do all the off-the-field things right so they can be great on the field? You don't know that. So when you see some of those guys and you see them, it's all clicking, they're all doing the right things, it really excites you. It just confirms it, that, hey, this is a valid decision. This guy can help us. And to be quite honest, sometimes you're a little disappointed and realize there's a lot of work to be done.
You had a pro day last week. Much of it built around Lexington Thomas and his physical feats. How ridiculous was he in the 40?
He was blazing. I mean, anytime you run into a 4.2, that's pretty fast. I mean, myself and him, I don't know too many guys have ever done that before.
Just slip that in. That was good.
Going down an escalator. But he was rolling, man. He looked really, really good. But, he did it his whole career. When you really look at, the amount of yards he rushed for, and then he had that during his sophomore year where he missed a handful of games, and then he was banged up at the end of this year. I think he would have ran away with the school record had he been, a little bit more durable at times. But, I mean, he's explosive, and it didn't make a difference what level of competition he played.
So what's going to happen to running back now? We know some of the names, but give us, four or five names in the running. Charles Williams would be, the leader coming out of the gates, but you brought in a late JUCO. You had some guys who were hurt, redshirting. So what's going to happen to running back?
Yeah, so Charles Williams, the guy right now, has had a great camp, real physical. He just got to keep developing his pass catching skills, but he's done a really good job, and I think he can be pretty special. A couple other guys, too, Chad Magyar, he's probably the most well-rounded back we have. I mean, he's a big kid, right there, right around 6'2", 215 pounds, runs really well. Probably our best pass catcher out of the backfield. So excited about him and some of the things that he's done. Trey Collinsworth's been working hard. He's kind of fighting on that fringe right now. Courtney Reese, like I said, has come in and done a really good job. Kind of, you can line him up in the slot. You can move him around, do a bunch of different things with him. So there's a handful of guys right now that have done a really, really good job. Biagio Walsh, everybody else in the country is eligible right away. I mean, I heard about another quarterback today, so I don't see why he wouldn't. And if he's eligible, I mean, I think he'll make a big difference.
Really? And we're still waiting on that one, though, huh?
Yeah, still waiting. They put us at the back of the line. Everybody else gets to go first.
Yeah. When you're watching your team at this time of year, do you want your offense or your defense to be ahead?
In the past, our offense has always been a little bit ahead. The explosive. I mean, defense have had good days. This is the most consistent we've seen our defense since I've been here. I mean, Skip and his crew have notably done a good job of recruiting length, developing the guys. I think there's a great understanding. We're not overdoing it with scheme. We're not doing a ton of things. Believe me, we're doing some really good, sound things. But, man, our guys are really doing a great job of communicating, playing hard, playing fast. And there's a lot of great leadership on that side of the ball. Javen White and Gabe McCoy, those two guys have been invaluable through this camp just with their leadership and their presence and their consistency. Vic Vermont has done a really good job. Farrell Hester's raised his game to a whole new level. Malachi Salou is a guy we redshirted last year. He's going to be a big-time player for us. So I'm excited about that. Kola Yusike at the defensive tackle spot. I mean, he's a guy that his freshman year played at 370. Then he got down to about 310 last year with a dominant force. At the end of the year, you look at those last four or five games, he's as good as any D lineman in the conference. And I'll tell you what, man, he going in now into his junior year, he's pretty special. So we've got some really good pieces there, and you're seeing good give and take back and forth. Probably better than we've ever seen.
You did suffer an injury, though. You mentioned the Caldwell surgery, but you did lose a receiver to a torn ACL, huh?
That was a big one. You know, I mean, when I look at it, and we've got some guys, you know, you got Darren Woods, you got Tyreek Collins, and Mekhi Stevenson, all real proven. And then you had, you know, Brandon Presley. We got a fifth-year senior coming in. That'd kind of be the five. And then we're looking at guys like Elijah Trosclair, Jeremy Clark. You know, we're looking at some of those guys to come in and, you know, can you fill that sixth role? So now you lose a guy that had darn near 1,000 yards in his career, 7 touchdowns, did a great job on backside slants and shades and posts. We got to replace that. Good thing is we got a couple scholarships in our back pocket. So we've got 4 guys that I'm really confident with. There's a couple other guys that I'd like to see step up and play a little bit better. Talented tight end group, so we can kind of pull from there a little bit. But I really want to see that that extra guy step up, and then we're going to go out and sign another receiver.
Tony Sanchez is with us, UNLV football coach. Spring game this weekend, Saturday, 11:30 start on ESPN, 1100, 100.9 FM. When do we get the invite to see the finished Fertitta Complex?
Well, hopefully sooner rather than later. I mean, they're grinding on it. I mean, it's working, and we're hoping it's going to be done sometime in the latter part of the summer. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, a lot of construction going on down right now, and, you know, obviously that's not my expertise, but, I mean, it's sometime in the summertime. I know that it was said earlier, you know, in April and things like that. I think that was, you know, a little aggressive, but I think sometime in the summertime. But, I mean, we walked through it today with Channel 8. Chris Matthews went through it. You know, we took 2 of our players, 2 of our seniors through there. Javen White and Gabe McCoy, and I mean the locker room, the lockers are all installed, and you know the hydrotherapy pool and the cold plungers are in there. I mean, the lobby's almost done. I mean, you walk through it now and it'll blow you away. It's pretty impressive.
All right, I'm picturing you like in June, just saying the hell with, like, I'm going to my office. Like, I'm just gonna work. You work around me. I'm fired up to be in here. Come on, let's go. Get it done.
Exactly.
Get this thing finished up. On the. The staff around the school, it's only been a couple of days, but did you have a chance to meet the new basketball coach yet?
Very briefly. There was a morning breakfast, shook his hand, said hi for, you know, all of about 60 seconds, sent him a text message wishing him luck. And so, yeah, he's around, I'm sure. I'm actually at the MGM right now. We're at a loyalty circle event that starts here at 6 o'clock, so I'm sure I'll see him. And, you know, excited for him. And, you know, and I know he's going to roll up his sleeves and do a heck of a job.
I did see out at the press conference. So, what were your thoughts when you saw the helicopter landing?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Those things are pretty neat. We did that a couple years ago for media day. We flew around to all the different spots. So, tell you what, you know, having been from Vegas, it was really cool. But being new and moving to Vegas and jumping in a helicopter and flying over, especially coming from South Dakota, right? It's a lot different. So, I'm sure he was fired up.
All right, Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes, and enjoy your event tonight, and we'll certainly have you on for a good amount of time on Saturday. Appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you guys. Go Rebs.
There you go. Tony Sanchez, UNLV football coach. Man, I'd be annoyed right now if that office wasn't done. Come on.
Let's go. He's got his office still currently.
I mean, there's a lot. This is a good time to be a laborer in town.
A lot of construction going on. A lot of projects.
But if we got a steel shortage, come on, let's go. Vegas to the front of the line. We got too many projects to get done.
There's things happening everywhere, mostly in construction.
You can hear the frustration in his voice. He's like, hopefully by the end of the summer.
You heard April. All right.
Punching the table. Oh, he's not near a table right now. But go. Finish it up. The place does look spectacular. By the way, I noticed how he slipped in. I asked for an invite, and then you're like, yeah, Chris Matthews was down today. What the hell's going on?
The important people came today. You guys will come later in the summer.
It's Matthews.
Grab bag. Is presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Try world-class restaurants like Chart House, Grotto Italian Ristorante, Vic and Anthony Steakhouse, and the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Only at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Grab Bag is presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Want it? Check it out.
Grab Bag.
Smells like fish in here.
Hey, don't touch that. That's nothing to play with, man.
On ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I apologize for the buffet rant. That might have gotten a little gross earlier. Not the subject matter itself, that there are MMA fighters and folks around MMA who work with the UFC who are dangerous individuals. And it makes Vegas an unsafe place at times, especially at these fights. But you gave me a note. Do you want to mention this on the air? You saw one of these dudes. So I was mentioning the Ponce Buffet brawl with Colby Covington, Usman, and really the instigator was a manager.
Yeah, I would say in that scenario. Well,
watching the video, he was.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Ali, we'll just go short. You said he frequents this area around the radio station?
I assume he does.
You saw him the other day?
I was
Or today?
Yesterday. There's a little restaurant over down the corner that I write at on a lot of days.
This is what I'm talking about. And you know what kind of car he drives?
I didn't see it.
Well, I'm scared. Seriously. Well, that guy is so irrational. And in so many fights, and his language, he's a pretty threatening dude.
He came right over my
table. I'm not going to mention the establishment. I'm out on that place. And head on a swivel. When I find out what car he has, like any one of those cars, the horn ain't honking, like just get out of his way.
But he came right over to my table. He offered to buy my lunch, which I had already paid for.
Is that right?
Fine. But yeah, he was very nice. So I think it's okay. But I also, it's interesting that you're not going to go to the establishment. You're going to punish them for allowing him to buy food there?
Yes. They should ban him. Okay. They should know who he is, and they should ban him.
I don't think they knew who
it was. Also the type of place that I probably wouldn't frequent because it's kind of healthy.
Oh, it's delicious.
Yes. If they had tubs of lard, literally tubs of lard, then I'd be in there. But I don't think they sell that.
They don't, but the Caesar salad with shrimp is fantastic.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Some updates on potential South Dakota State commits and former players to UNLV. One, Caleb Grill, the commit, he has visited Creighton today, Iowa State yesterday, may visit Kansas State, I think has an offer from Nebraska, had an offer in the past from Texas Tech. This is getting interesting. I think a lot of people were like, UNLV's getting him.
Well, Nebraska was obviously a previous regime, right. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, I have to imagine UNLV is very much in the mix since he committed to South Dakota State. But yeah, at this time of year, a guy like that reopening his recruiting is going to have a lot of interest.
Their best returning player, David Jenkins, according to Ellie Leibs, says David Jenkins Jr., interest from TCU, Gonzaga, Cincy, Colorado, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Reno, Arizona, Memphis, Kansas, Butler, Washington State, Montana, Seattle, UCSB, and UNLV.
UNLV's on the list, at least. But yeah,
what's your prediction?
I think UNLV has a very good chance, but he does have a chance, as you mentioned that list, to play anywhere he wants. He is one of the better players in the country.
Last prediction. Chris Matthews just mentioned him. Yeah, he's getting getting all the tours. He said 2027 or 2028. Mark it down. Final Four in Vegas. I'll go over 2030.
2029.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to go down the middle. You're not going to pick a side
right.
Between me and Sports 8, huh?